This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths. And in studio, we have Laura Condon, and we're laughing because of the ad that just was on about getting your flu vaccine. Laura, when we were going to break, we were talking about the fact that school children are expected to have a certain number of vaccines. Now, what are the rules as far as parents opting out? How many vaccines are they expected to have? You know, give us some background on that.
Those are important questions. And, you know, sometimes parents have a tough time figuring out what is required of their children. And you can go to New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services website and find out that information. But you have to be careful what you click on, because if you click on what you think are the required vaccines for New Hampshire children, it'll take you to the CDC recommended vaccines, which are a whole lot of additional vaccines beyond the required ones. But in any event, in New Hampshire, it is required that children even going into daycare or preschool are required to get vaccines. In fact, the requirements for children going into daycare, this is children prior to 2 years of age, are required 26 vaccinations. That's some of those even for sexually transmitted diseases.
Now, that's because they're sexually active at 1.5.
It's it really makes illicit IV drug use, and it makes absolutely no sense that those children are being injected with, and that's the hepatitis B vaccine, that it's injected at birth, and it makes absolutely no sense. There's not even sufficient evidence that would show that at such time your child might grow and mature and engage in these activities, which many of us believe are inappropriate. We would instruct our children otherwise and protect our children that way. But there's no evidence that, in fact, the immunity even persists that long. And there's no testing to determine whether, you know, any immunity was conferred upon those injections.
So wouldn't this is my logical mind, I think. It's logical anyway. Wouldn't you vaccinate if you suspected that there might be a problem rather than just vaccinate willy-nilly? And this sounds like it's just they vaccinate over anything, no matter what, just because it might be.
It is indeed mass indiscriminate vaccination is what we've got for a vaccination policy here in this country and here in New Hampshire. You know, mass indiscriminate without regard to is this person a high risk for this particular illness or disease?
Exactly.
You know, based on their medical conditions, based on their lifestyle, based on their exposures. And that is not how our vaccine policy is driven in this country. It's inject as many as you can, as soon as you can. Grab them and jab them sort of policy is what it is. And those children who've been to daycare, who've had those 26 vaccines, there's actually, because there's additional ones for daycare that wouldn't normally required for school age, if they go to daycare and then they go to school, they will have needed 30 vaccines by the time they hit first grade. This is a six-year-old who's had 30 vaccines. And in fact, beyond the 30, there's an additional 16 that are recommended by the CDC in addition to the mandated ones. So potentially, there are 46 vaccines that are mandated for children up to age 6 before they set foot in that sixth grade classroom.
Now, see, I have a
first grade classroom.
I have a microbiology background, and so I understand that anytime the process in developing these vaccines is that really they're giving you a very, very minute form of the actual invasive, whether it's virus, whatever it is, the disease itself. So they're giving you this very minor amount so that you can build up your immunities to it. 44 different vaccines, and they're
46 recommended.
46, okay. And then they're doing this all in how many shots? Because I think they combine them, don't they?
They do, and there's new and growing combinations. It's really kind of tough to keep up with being produced and marketed out there. There are some vaccines that are injected by themselves. There are some that they combine. So depending upon what your doctor might have available, but many of those are in combination, and you cannot select say, for example, the tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, you cannot select just a tetanus vaccine. That will always come either with diphtheria or pertussis, whether you are have need for those additional vaccines or not. But if you can, you know, market more than one vaccine, you know, what a savvy marketing policy for the vaccine industry to combine them in that way. They're certainly manufactured separately, but then they're combined and sold as a combination. So there's a potential to do them individually.
Mm-hmm. And then they give boosters on top of that. So,
well, many of these out of the 46, many of those are booster shots. There's five of the DPT shots that are required before first grade, apparently because the first one didn't work, the second one didn't work, the third one didn't work, the fourth one didn't work, and now the fifth one didn't work because they are now required additional boosters for 11-year-olds for that one. So now they're injecting with a sixth one because apparently those don't work. But it's interesting, Karen, that you talked about, you're correct that it's a component of a disease, whether it be a virus or a bacterial component. Maybe live, it may be a killed component, but it's not just that that's injected into the body. There's additional adjuvants, which are stimulants and irritants to cause the body to react, to have a significant reaction to be in what's injected in them to kind of stimulate the immune reaction. But what we're getting from vaccines is very limited immune reaction, and they measure that by the antibodies that your body develops to the particular antigen that's been injected. But as we are learning more and more about how the immune system works, antibodies are only one part of the immune process. And in fact, the way that we get exposed to all these illnesses is not through an injection in our arm or our thigh or our buttocks. It is actually through the oral passages, through the nose or through the mouth. And that is those membranes, those mucous membranes, you know, whatever, saliva, whatever, those are the first lines of defense to attack those microbes. And through vaccination, we are entirely bypassing that part of the immune system, the respiratory system, the digestive tract, which is the first line of a attack on those sort of microbes that would invade the body. And we're going straight into the body, really a foreign introduction of disease into the body.
It's an all-out frontal attack on the body. And it's interesting, too, because I think it completely sidesteps the reality that are those microbes also mutate. And they become, they change their ability to attack because they want to survive. And you hear about the immunity that is developed by the body or by the microbes to certain antibiotics, to certain treatments. And so we're really setting us up for a failure down the road, it would seem.
And that is a growing concern. I'm glad you brought that up, because these microbes, these viruses and bacteria, they are simple microbes. They are some of the simplest forms of life on the planet, and they do easily and quickly mutate. Mm-hmm. And we've learned that through antibiotic use, that an overuse of antibiotics is we now have virulent strains of bacteria for which there are no known and sufficient and safe antibiotics to use to combat those.
And the fascinating thing is to me is that when I was in college, that's what we were taught by our microbiologists, were that you had to be extremely careful not to treat a virus infection with an antibiotic, because the antibiotics were made for bacterial infections only. And yet it seems like people are just now discovering in the last 20 years that, oh dear, we shouldn't be treating viral infections with the antibiotics. And I keep wondering, where did they go to school and what didn't they learn along the process? Because I went to school a long time ago and I learned that and am very, very much aware of it, you know. And the other thing that we were often taught were that it's amazing the different things that we use in just everyday products, thinking that they're going to prevent bacterial infection and so forth. And I remember testing things in on the Petri dish, things like Lysol, you know, that was supposed to kill all of those bacteria in your bathroom and so forth. And we'd go in with a Petri dish and we'd pour Lysol all over one of them and then have a control dish and we'd dip our injection in both of them. And, you know, the Lysol seemed to grow real well. It was really funny to me. But at any rate, I digress a bit, but it's amazing to me that it's taken so long for some people to realize what we've been teaching in our schools many, many years ago.
Well, and this is the science of it too, Karen, is these microbes, we share the planet with these simple microbes. Yeah. And to think that by any method, through vaccines or antibiotics, that we can eliminate these simple microbes from the planet is pure folly. It just simply isn't going to happen. These microbes, what we know is they do mutate, and then we have more virulent strains. And we've seen similar things with vaccines that we've seen with antibiotics. We now have new strains of pertussis because of use of the whooping cough vaccine. We have new strains of polio from the polio vaccine. We have new strains of chickenpox from the chickenpox vaccine. And these are referred to as the vaccine-derived strain. CDC even recognizes them as such. So we're creating actually new strains of disease by mass indiscriminate use of vaccination. It's the same nonsense of mass indiscriminate use of antibiotics, and doctors have become much more selective, much more scrutinizing, you know, and seeing if the body can fight off the illness. Is an antibiotic really called for? And really, that's the prudent use of vaccines, and probably should be the prudent use of vaccines as well. Is there a real need in this particular individual?
Laura Condon is our New Hampshire voice for vaccine. I said that wrong. Our New Hampshire voice for vaccine choice. That's right. I did start to say it right. I thought, wait a minute, I've got a word out of order here. And actually, she says that you can find a lot of good information at nvic.org. That's stands for the
National Vaccine Information Center.
Thank you very much. And you can also go to Facebook and look up Vax, the AX. Choice New Hampshire NH, Vax Choice NH, and find out more information and even get in contact with Laura there. Now, Laura, one of the other things that I think is really interesting is that it seems that in many cases, Gardasil, this DTaP, and so forth, that they are recommending people get vaccinated with these various vaccines without fully testing them in the background. I mean, we're administering them to 11-year-olds and both boys and girls, and we haven't necessarily got good research on whether or not they're even effective on those ages. Is this a typical practice with vaccines? I mean, do they normally do that kind of thing where we're pushing a vaccine that really hasn't been adequately tested on that particular age group, so we don't really know whether they're going to be effective?
There are chronic problems with the testing and the approval of vaccines for use in various populations. In fact, Karen, if you look at the entire vaccine schedule, that has never been tested for safety or efficacy to see if repeated doses of the DTaP, what happens when you have six doses of DTaP injected into an individual over their lifetime. And of course, now the CDC came out with a recent recommendation that the Tdap variation, the DTaP, be injected in pregnant women with every pregnancy. But in fact, if you go to the manufacturer's website, pull up their prescribing information for their own vaccine, the manufacturer, in their own words, details that this vaccine has never been tested for safety and efficacy in pregnant women. So in fact, we're very much conducting a science experiment on pregnant women. And in fact, in conjunction with that science experiment, there is a collection of data on those women to see what in fact happens when they inject those pregnant women. Are those children stillborn? Are they born with birth defects? Are they born immune compromised? And what happens to those pregnant women? What happens to their pregnancy? And so there now is a survey being set up where doctors can report that information on pregnant women. And my concern is that pregnant women aren't sufficiently being told that they are actually participating in a science experiment. But even, you know, when you talk about the Gardasil vaccine, indeed, that was one vaccine that was rushed to market, you know, really not sufficiently tested. And there are political and financial reasons why it was rushed to market. The Gardasil itself is a Merck product. And Merck, as you may know, was suffering financial fallout from the lawsuits of their Vioxx drug that was pulled from the market that killed and injured hundreds of people. And they needed, here's a pun here for you, a shot in the arm to rejuvenate their finances. And the Gardasil vaccine was their shot in the arm to revive them financially from the fallout of that Vioxx scandal and how it hurt people. So there was a real rush to market to get that vaccine out there. And it has not been sufficiently tested.
Well, we've been talking with Laura Condon, who's our New Hampshire voice for vaccine choice. This is Karen Testerman. We'll be back after the break.